That's right. Composer and lyricist on tenor saxophone, in this case, Wayne Shorter with Footprints. We also have Herbie Hancock on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, Joe Chambers on drums. It is from Shorter's 2003 album, Adam's Apple. This is Lead Stories. I'm Patrice Lead. And a very interesting program, I hope we have today, because it would star your brain power. That's right. Your brains are going to be the focal point of this program today. Why? Because we're getting word that Derek Chauvin is probably not going to testify, probably not going to take the stand in his own defense before this trial ends. From all indications, it appears that that is what will happen. I can't say I blame him or his lawyers, because at this point in the trial, with so many things having happened, raising even more questions, demanding even more answers, I think his advisors and certainly his lawyers give him the idea that he should stay away from the witness stand. But we'll see. His lawyers instead will lean heavily on expert witness testimony that uniformly cited George Floyd's tenuous state of health up to and including the time of his arrest, and that prolonged resistance to being arrested caused his tragic death on May the 25th last year. The defense, this is Chauvin's lawyers, coursed through the jury through a cocktail of drugs found in Floyd's system during an autopsy, and walked the jurors through what were described as abnormalities in Floyd's heart, and made the charge essentially that that was what brought death to George Floyd. He caused his own problem by prolonged drug use that distorted his system and particularly his heart. But it wasn't drug use that killed George Floyd, prosecutors said. It was Chauvin's use of a painful and illegal method of restraint that cut off Floyd's blood flow and air supply for at least 9.5 minutes. Floyd already was dead by the time an ambulance reached the scene. So, without Chauvin's testimony and the opportunity to question him, what is likely to be the outcome of this trial? That's where your brain comes in. We want to hear from you today what you surmise the outcome of the trial will be, with Chauvin more than likely not testifying, and therefore not making himself available for questions. This case has to come to an end sometime soon. It's almost a month now. And the whole world is watching what is going on in Minneapolis and this particular case. So, what are you thinking would be the likely ending of this trial. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And I don't want you to retry the case. You know, we've gone through quite a bit of it. Let's be looking for your prognosis now. We're looking for your prediction. What is likely to be the end of this case? How will it go? Is Chauvin going to be convicted? Is the jury going to be in a lock saying we can't decide? Or will he just walk because the jury doesn't think there is enough convincing evidence to convict? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I want to hear your legal mind at work today. And I want you to point to specifics in this case that shore up whatever point of view you have about it and about the possible outcome of the case. I say possible because you never know. Cases go through some strange changes, especially as they come to a very precise point in a trial. And that is, it looks like they're going to wrap up the case, but you don't quite know. And even if they wrap up the case, how will they vote? How will the jury vote in this situation? Would your vote mirror what the jury is thinking when they do vote? Or do you think your vote will be decidedly different from what the jury delivers as its verdict? All right, so that's it. We are waiting to see confirmation that Chauvin basically is taking a pass at testifying. He will not go on the stand, which, if you think about it, is a very interesting and strategic move. If he is on the stand, chances are the prosecution could reopen this case and bring up new information and ask him to respond. And this late in the trial, it could only work against him. So maybe there is a thought that the jury has enough information right now to make a decision. And Chauvin does not need to help the jury. There is enough evidence that the jury doesn't have to work too hard in this case. And that will be jeopardizing Chauvin's future. If they leave the situation right now, leave it open to essentially to have lawyers dismantle his argument some more. A lot of damage has been done to Chauvin's testimony in previous and other people testifying in his behalf. But do they need to open this up again? And now, when they do, or if they do, it comes at the end of the case, which means it would be fresh in the memory of jurors. 888-874-4888 is the number. What is your prediction about how this case will come to an end? What would be the jury's decision? You have any ideas on it? Let's know. Let's hear it at 888-874-4888. I see you kind of reticent today to share your views. Why, are you getting getting some cold feet? What's going on? You're normally very eager to offer an opinion. but I see people are slow on the draw today. And that has me thinking that maybe you're not as confident in your view. And I can't see why you should be confident in your view, whatever your view is, because you've been paying attention to this case. If Chauvin does not testify, and it looks, and we talked about that the other day, it looks like he wouldn't. He's making a decision he believes in his best interest, and we have to respect that. The thing is, at this point, not what Chauvin actually believes. What matters now is what the jury is likely to believe, and it will vote accordingly based on what they believe. So it's at a very ticklish point, and I can't wait to hear what the rationale is for their vote, whichever way they vote. George from New York, you're on the air.
Oh, wow. So I just thought I would call in. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. I have an experience from a long time ago, like where I had a friend who was the court portraitist for the St. John's University rape trial. Many, many years ago, there were some young men who were accused of a rape, and all of the media painted the picture that they were going to be guilty. And so when they were released and found innocent, everyone was up in arms. But she had been in court the whole time, and she said there was no question, given the evidence that was presented. So although I therefore think it is impossible to know what's going on unless we were actually in the courtroom. And I know there's a lot of censorship in the media of what's going on in that courtroom. I would think so, because the media wants to stay on the right side of public opinion. But I think nonetheless that whether George Floyd was completely high on drugs, whether he was a criminal, whether he was just a very large man, I think there's a certain responsibility that the people feel a policeman owes to someone whose condition may be weakened, whether through drugs or age or how big he is. And so I think there's going to be a manslaughter. I think that's one of the main options. I think there will be a manslaughter guilty verdict upheld because we expect the police to be able to respond to someone who is ill. And if this man was ill, if George Floyd was, we don't really know if he did have an aspect of the corona flu that was infecting his lungs, if he was high on fentanyl and maybe, what's that other thing, crystal meth, whatever he was on, and if he was involved in a criminal activity at the moment. I mean, that's a lot of high stress. Plus, he was enormous. So that's also hard for a body to sustain. So I think it would have been logical. It would have been necessary for them to realize, just as they would if it was a really old man, to be careful of someone who was saying they can't breathe. So I think the fact that they didn't really listen to that might make not only the Officer Chauvin, but the others who also had their weight on his body. You know, it doesn't matter that it was drugs. It doesn't matter that it was the coronavirus. If the police had me down on the, I'm also a very large man, and I couldn't breathe, and I'm a little older than Mr. Floyd was, but I'd expect a little more care from a police officer. And I think that feeling might register with the jury. Regardless of color, what color people's skin is or anything, it's like the policeman had this big old man who was kind of weak on the ground. And that's what I think. I think it'll be manslaughter.
Do you put any special emphasis on the fact that this was not just a regular way of restraining someone? This was, in fact, a knee pressed up against the veins and arteries in his neck. And this was more than just being treating a prisoner or wouldn't be prisoner in this way. This is something else that goes beyond it.
Yeah, I don't know, because I know that there's some indication, some of the evidence that was presented that may not hold for the jury was that it wasn't that the breathing in the neck was obstructed, that in fact the knee was more on the shoulder, and that the other officers were applying pressure. I think that's all very moot and up for debate. And whether it was or was not an ordinary way of maintaining someone from being violent, I think those things are all arguable. So I think the decision.
So let me ask you directly: in your mind, was George Floyd murdered?
Oh no! I mean, but
no,
It was just that the police failed to respond to his fragility. He had drugs in his system. He apparently, some people think he had the corona flu in him. His health was severely compromised.
Yes, by that foot in the neck. I would say that was very compromising for 9.5 minutes.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. The police are meant to respond to someone, and if their system is highly compromised, they need to be more careful with them. You know?
Okay, you're being very kind. I'm talking murder, and you're talking they didn't give him the full measure of courtesy while being arrested.
Murder has to do with the intention to. The intention to kill somebody. Isn't that murder? It's an intentional. I don't think that was what was going on there.
Okay. We differ, but I'm glad that you called in and offered your opinion. Mohammed from New York, you're on the air.
Are you, Trees? I sincerely
hope
your health continues to improve.
And thank you.
You're very welcome. And I hope you're well, doing, feeling good right now. I don't think this is my personal perspective. It's too much evidence for for Chauvin to go on that stand, because one reason is the whole world saw it. What his lawyer's going to do in the
it
Monday?
It's his right, but please understand, it is his right to not to testify.
Utrice, when that much evidence is against you, you don't get up on those stand. You take a plea or you leave it to your lawyers. It's too much evidence.
Well, the lawyers had to agree that if he is not going to appear on the stand, the lawyers would have to pretty much go along with his desire not to testify.
Well, just being a person who had Bennett have a lot of experience in the justice system, I happen to know something about that. When you are guilty of something and you know you're guilty, you don't go up on that stand unless you're forced to. His lawyers, I think, are going to try to justify his doing what he did, and based on him not being guilty because of what was in Mr. Floyd's system. But the rest of the world saw that, and the rest of the world reacted. That's nature. That's not just no one particular person or a particular community. So I think he'll be found guilty of probably second-degree murder or maybe third degree. But that was murder. That was murder, whether he intended to or he didn't tend to. If you're in the process of doing something that's not particularly legal and you kill a person by mistake, you are still charged with murder. It might not be first-degree murder, but it's going to be murder. And I'm talking from a lot of personal experiences and a lot of particular people around me, and I happen to know something about that justice system. And thank you for hearing
so
me. I appreciate
you,
it.
Yes, but let me ask you one question before you go. So if Chauvin decides he's not testifying, how would you translate that action?
He might incriminate himself if he testifies. That's why I don't think, and this is a projection, I don't think he will. This is subjective because too much evidence against him. You don't go up there and testify when you know you're guilty of something. You take a plea if you can. If you have some very good lawyers, you leave it to them. Talking from personal experience.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for calling in and contributing.
You're very welcome. Have a good day.
Thank you. Ed from Queens, you're on the air. How do you interpret the situation if Chauvin decides he's not testifying? That's it.
Oh, good afternoon, Yatrice. How are you?
Okay, Ed.
Specifically dealing with your question based on the observations I've made of the trial and my limited legal experience. Chauvin's not going to testify. Like I said yesterday, most of the time, a defendant doesn't get up in a jury trial and testify unless his story is ironclad. Unless he truly is not guilty and there's no shadow of a doubt and the story can't be shot through, because the prosecutor controls the narrative to a certain extent in cross-examination, and it can destroy you if you get up there and you try to, and your story's not airtight. So I don't think Chauvin's going to testify. That being said, with the evidence that has been laid out so far, depraved indifference to human life, because a lot of it also depends on the judge's instruction as far as before the jury goes to deliberate. So I can see depraved indifference to human life. I don't think they really made a strong case for intent, which is what murder, as far as I know, in New York State, murder implies intent. I believe there was depraved indifference to human life based on the testimony of the police experts and the way that Chauvin the way Chauvin held him down, the amount of time for the position of the knee, and the fact that he did expire from lack of oxygen. So I think depraved indifference to human life would be the harshest thing they would come up with. I hope not, but legally, I think manslaughter is also going to be on the table. Like I said, a lot depends on the judge's instruction on before deliberation, which I know they're going to give. And what really concerns me is the fact that the large payment was made by the state prior to the trial, which could also be reasonable ground for appeal or ground for a mistrial because that's going to be the next part of this game. How can we appeal this case? How can we limit his time? Once things have died down, were there grounds for appeal? Was there prejudice? I mean, the courtroom was surrounded by paramilitary troops. The police were paramilitary. There was a lot of tension in the air. All of these things could be raised by a defense team as to throw the verdict into question and open the doors for a mistrial and a retrial.
But let's deal with the facts that did emerge in this trial. You have a police officer who was also heavily into martial arts. He knew exactly where to put his knee, where to apply pressure on the neck of George Floyd. And that's what he did, causing George Floyd to die. even though there was testimony about George Floyd having an unusually large heart and other things that were wrong with his insides, and attributing it to his regular use of fentanyl and what is the other drug, fentanyl and, it's slipping me now. I'm sorry?
Methamphetamine, fentanyl and methamphetamine, speed, basically.
Yes, right. But that he basically medicated himself into that condition. So to that degree, it was his responsibility to take care of his health. However, he was a drug addict. Even his girlfriend testified that they were both addicted to opioids. And so they did this, they made this testimony that in effect was used to kind of deaden the public to any kind of sympathy they would have for George Floyd.
They wanted to besmirch the character and using drug addiction as being a character flaw. But I think that people realize that drug addiction is a clinical disease with real symptoms, and there's a real clinical aspect to it as far as treatment is concerned. We don't have the 1960s, 1970s view of, oh, you're a drug addict, or you're scum, or you're a lowlife. I mean, throughout recent history, there have been celebrities, there have been Congress, there have been political people, there have even been people in the clergy that are involved with drugs.
There have been presidents who have been addicted to medication. In this atmosphere, how do you think people can overcome the prejudicial nature of what the defense was trying to do, which is to make people see George Floyd as nothing else but an addict? And he didn't care what he was doing to his body. And finally, you know, he reaped what he sowed.
Well, I think that backfired. I mean, I really don't. I'm not in the mind of the jurors, but in conversations with other people during the workday, talking with family members, I really think that defense backfired. I mean, people don't buy that anymore. They don't make the moral judgment, oh, you're an addict. You're like I said, you're talking about the 1960s, the 1970s. You're talking about when rehabilitation was totally different. You had therapeutic communities. Now people are realizing that there are legitimate medical and genetic concerns that can lead to addiction, and that it's a real problem, and that there are medical and psychological treatments that prevail in addiction. So I don't think we're making a character judgment based on your abuse of substance or not. It's a medical condition, and it can be addressed, and Mr. Floyd was in the process of addressing it. Whether successful or not, we all know that, well, anybody that knows anything about rehab, you fall sometimes and then you come back. You fall sometimes and then you come back. There's several, it's a process. And he was in the process. And I think the prosecution proved that he was in the process. What I'm saying is I just don't trust the DAs. And I think that the offer is going to play part in getting the verdict dismissed and getting a retrial. There are a lot of specious things that have taken place during this trial that after the first part is over, we'll play into the second part. This isn't over. You know, this is not going to go away quietly. They'll let it die down. He's got money behind him. He's got the PBA behind him. And they're going to play this thing as it lays. And until these cops get punished the way they should, like I was saying yesterday, it's always going to be in the back of their mind that if I shoot a black man, I won't go to jail.
So let me ask you, in your view, if it turns out that, in fact, Chauvin is not going to testify, do you think that decision will hurt him or help him?
I think it will hurt. I mean, I think it'll hurt him. I think he's hurt irregardless because of the high profile nature of this case and the fact that a lot of people have already developed a mindset prior to coming in, no matter what the juror said in voir dire, because you can only know a man's mind if you're, or a woman's mind if you're in their mind. So I think a lot of prejudgment went into this case, which is also going to be a factor in trying to get him a new trial. But I don't believe he will testify because, like I said, normally when your defense lawyer will instruct you not to, because like I said, the DA can take your story and twist it in cross examination. And if your story isn't ironclad, if it isn't airtight, you'd be incriminating yourself. And in this system, you have the right not to incriminate yourself. And how that looks to the jury, I mean, that's how it goes.
Well, thank you for your opinion today. Thanks for contributing.
Thank you.
We go next to Leona from Michigan. You're on the air.
Greetings, Utrice, and greetings to your audience.
Thank you, and to you too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Whether or not police officer Chauvin testifies, I don't know that will make a bunch of difference. I don't know that will make a bunch of difference in the way this trial is going or will go, what have you. A couple things that kind of concern me a little bit about the trial. I think that it's possible that there will be a hung jury and he will not be convicted of any of those charges. But what concerns me is what two things mostly: the cycle of insanity that Dr. Welsing talked about, and what may happen if Chauvin is not convicted. I think his conviction will rest on what the global white supremacists want, what the rulers and the shakers of the system want. That they are going to determine whether or not he is convicted or not convicted. Now, one of the things I'm concerned about,
before you move on,
yeah,
what convinces you of that opinion?
The opinion that the global white supremacist will determine the verdict. Okay. Well, the fact that back in 2020, May 2020. The reaction to the video and his murder took on a global aspect. There were protests around the globe, so to speak. Those protests had to be financed by somebody. I know that the Open Society Foundation, which is run pretty much by the billionaire financier, liberal philanthropist George Soros and some of his offspring, a couple of his sons, Alexander and Jonathan. I know that that Open Society Foundation has donated money to the so-called Black Lives Matter movement, and the Black Lives Matter movement was one of the participants in these global protests. You know, I saw a number of signs, you know, and some people. There was a lot of controversy, even now, with this Black Lives Matter movement.
Yes, but does it make you uncomfortable that you've come to pretty hard conclusions without any proof?
Pretty hard conclusions without any proof?
Yes.
Does it bother me?
Yes. Or does it occur
to
you?
I'm just expressing an opinion. I'm just saying that I think
this is not just an opinion. You see, this is the thing. You're sharing your point of view.
Yes.
And you're presenting what people would call facts.
Yes.
And you're not in a position to say, I know this to be true because A, B, C, D.
Well,
you are conjecturing and you're hypothesizing.
I may be doing that too, but in addition, I'm going by some of the information I gathered from a few websites online, one in particular called Influence Watch. and it tracks nonprofits and their funding and records things like that. And I've seen Black Lives Matter listed as one of the recipients from Open Societies Foundation, the Soros Network.
We're talking about what you specifically, you, Leona, what you are thinking.
I'm telling you what I'm thinking.
To tell us what this organization has said or what that organization has said. What do you personally think? That's what we're looking for.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is I personally think that verdict is going to depend upon what the powers that be, and the real powers that be, in my view, are the global white supremacists. They're going to decide whether or not this man is convicted or not. That's my personal opinion.
Personal opinion. That doesn't mean it's right or legitimate.
I agree. I'm not saying I'm right.
It's my personal opinion.
I'm not saying I'm correct.
People get away, and I think you're close to that point of basically using scattershot logic and not anything that you can point to and absolutely defend as the truth of what you know. You can't just say, well, now organization A said this and organization B said that. People are going to say a lot of things, but that was not the question. The question is, what do you think? What is your personal organic opinion? And what informs it?
Okay. My personal organic opinion is that I'm a victim of the system of racism, white supremacy. George Floyd was as well. This system of racism, white supremacy is about white genetic survival by any means necessary. It's a war against non-white people and black men in particular. Black men hold the greatest potential for white genetic survival, and men period. Men can initiate sexual intercourse.
But you're getting into a polemic, Leona, that doesn't really address my question.
All right, well, let me back up. Tell me your question.
We don't need a lecture now on what is white supremacy. We need that you address the question in play.
Okay.
What, first of all, is it a good move or a bad move that Chauvin decides, if he should decide, not to testify? And why?
A good move for who?
Well, obviously for Chauvin.
If he wants to, I don't know if it's a good move or not for him. It depends on what he wants and what he's trying to do. I thought his video testimony was pretty.
If he decides that he's not going to testify, is that a good move for him, knowing what we know about the case?
I don't know if that's a good move for him or not.
Okay. We leave it there.
Yeah.
We don't know whether it's a good move or not.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling in and contributing today.
Yes, ma'am.
Gary from Hempstead. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, you trees.
Hello. Good afternoon.
So just want to weigh in quickly. I think that I'm not sure. I assume that the judge has already instructed, or maybe that comes later, the jury, that, you know, they should not really put anything in terms of their deliberation on whether Chauvin testifies or not. So I think it's a smart move for him not to, and for his sake, because as you mentioned earlier in the broadcast, it would leave herself open for other lines of questioning that could be detrimental to his case. I do believe that there will be a conviction on at least, I believe it's manslaughter, whichever one has nothing to do with intent. Because I've listened not every single minute of the day, I've listened to a decent amount of the testimony, and I'm not sure that, and I don't think a lot has been put on in terms of evidence, intent, anything to deal with intent. I don't remember hearing anything, which I heard prior to the trial beginning, about bad blood between Chauvin and Mr. Floyd, because that definitely could have influenced how he treated this man in such a vulnerable position. But I believe that as long as we don't have people who are thinking like the first caller today was thinking, I think that we will get at least a conviction because this man did kill Mr. Floyd.
The question is, well, he is charged with three things.
Yes.
He's charged with second-degree unintentional murder.
Yes.
Third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. Those are the charges on which he was indicted.
Right.
None of them you think fits?
Well, I do believe that a case could be possibly made if a juror needs to really stretch their perspective to embrace a guilty verdict for unintentional, a cause of death. But I absolutely believe that there was recklessness and a disregard for human life, and I'm not sure which charge addresses that. But I don't
But how do you prove that a knee deliberately jammed into a man's neck, cutting off his air supply, cutting off blood flow, could possibly be unintentional? And for 9.5 minutes.
I'm not suggesting that that was the case, that it was not intentional. I'm saying that there may be some people who might have a hard time convicting this guy, except if you offset a little bit of his accountability and responsibility by saying unintentional. I think he will be convicted on something.
Okay.
I'm not sure it will be
making the case for anything unintentional. It seems to me we learned through the trial that what Chauvin did, everything he did, was intentional.
I think his actions were purposeful in a sense of restraining this man. I'm not sure there's been enough information put forward relative to intent. I think there's absolutely been enough information put forward to indicate that he was the definite cause of death, his actions. I think it'd be hard-pressed to get a juror to say, that man wanted to kill him. He intended to kill him. That's a little tough based on the evidence that was put forward. Like I said, I didn't hear anything about the relationship that they had prior to, which I think is significant. If they had bad blood, if they had run-ins,
What does that do? I mean, so they had bad blood and they had run-ins, but I'm still trying to get an explanation from you of what you call 9 minutes and 30 seconds on a man's neck, cutting off his air supply, cutting off blood flow to the head and brain. And you know this because you knew the pressure points as a martial artist.
Yep.
It's not like he's a total innocent here. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Right.
Okay.
I think that he was the cause of death. I just am not 100% sure that enough has been made on intent. Just not sure.
Is it enough that these things that I just talked about, putting his foot at a strategic point on a man's body,
right,
that would cause him to go unconscious, eventually,
right,
to die, to cut off air supply and blood supply. Is that enough for you to prove intent?
I think where a case for intent could be made is based on the training that this man has had.
He had no training. And that's what was testified to. It was testified to by the highest level person, Arredondo, in the police department, that is completely outside of police training. There is no course taught to incoming police officers, or even in refresher courses. That move is absolutely not taught because it is illegal.
Well, that's the point I was just making. Based on his training, on his training alone, a case for intent could be made that this man should have known better, because he's had over 800 hours, I believe the figure was, of training in use of force. So based on that alone, a case for intent could be made. But
we also have something that was not introduced at trial, which was the history. What was Chauvin's history as a cop?
Well,
in terms of inflicting violence on others.
Right. That was, I believe, excluded by the judge.
Yes, it was excluded.
Yeah, which seemed prejudicial against the prosecution.
The fact is, it is relevant, is it not?
Absolutely.
Don't you think? Okay, so why was it excluded? The judge is not supposed to decide, well, this will be prejudicial because the jury is not sophisticated enough to make a distinction. That's what the judge decided. He could think for the jury and make decisions. But thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Henry, we have somebody else in Morocco, I believe from Virginia. Are you there? Is Morocco with us? Okay, then we move on. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, sweet, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
Good.
I guess in regards to your question, it would definitely be a mistake for Officer Chauvin to testify. And I say that on the basis of past cases where cops who are in question that testify didn't turn out in their favor. One being, and I always, look back at this case and look at this current case that's going on in the trial of Jason Van Dyke, who was convicted, actually, of killing Laquan McDonald. And he was actually convicted of second-degree murder. Well, he testified in that trial, and that basically hurt his chances of getting off. You can go far back as the O.J. Simpson trial when Mark Furman testified. And basically that hurt, the prosecution's case against O.J. Simpson. So it's not, going back on history, it's not going to a good thing for him to get off if he testifies. Now, this is not a done deal or, 100% sure that, if he testifies that he's going to get convicted, because obviously we're dealing with a much different system here who could easily, you know, he can go up there and say that he intentionally killed George Floyd, and he still might get off. But, you know, you never know what happens. But obviously, looking back on history, yeah, I'm pretty sure the lawyers basically told him, just sit down, let us do the work, and, you know, see if we can get you off. But I do see, as far as the results of the trial, there are two possibilities that I see in this case. One, I probably see a second-degree murder conviction with a very light sentencing. And like I said, I parallel this to the Jason Van Dyke trial, a guy who was sentenced to the lowest amount of years for a second-degree murderer. I believe it was 7 years. Or, and I think Leona had mentioned this, a hung jury.
Okay. So you do know that you just placed a bet. We'll see how close to it you get. We'll see how close an analysis you made here today. But thank you so much for calling in and contributing.
Thanks.
We have one more to go. Sweets from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice, how you doing?
Okay.
Listen, I got to go a different way. If I was Chauvin and I wanted to shave my butt, I stay off that. You know, I wouldn't testify. Okay. The other thing is that when you look at it historically, Dred Scott came to mind, saying that we don't have rights, and Rodney King. You know, I remember looking at the summation, and I remember the people saying that in the case of Rodney King, we find that no person was injured. And I almost fell out of my chair because the whole world seen that beatdown. And they could still come to that conclusion. There's a film out now called Exterminate the Brutes. And there's a mentality of looking at us as being less than human. So somebody on that jury could sit there throughout the whole thing and still come to the conclusion that a person wasn't injured. So therefore, we can't convict. So that's how I see this, just looking at history.
Well, I could try something like that, but really, I don't know that that would have much merit to make that argument.
There was no person?
Yeah.
I'm only going by what I heard.
In so much as Black people are not real people, no person was injured.
That's what they said in the Rodney King case.
Well,
when they did that summation, that's what made me.
I don't remember that.
Huh?
But I said I don't remember that. But
oh yes,
even
I was watching.
It was said. Here's mm-hmm. a question:
mm-hmm.
Do you think that mentality or that belief will hold up today?
I think it's pervasive. I've served on jury duty, grand jury, and I think people should do that, because they get a chance to hear what's presented. And after a while, when those cops come in, they always got the same story. So just like I think it was a trial recently where a woman was on a jury and said that she had no intention on convicting the cop that was involved or whoever was involved. So they go in like that, and, you know, who's to say? I'm not a gambling man, so I'm not gambling that these people are going to act righteous.
All right, we have to leave it there because we're out of time for today.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel, because there are so many people who didn't get in their words today, that we would extend the discussion tomorrow too. Thanks so much, Sweets, for calling in and expressing your point of view. And
yes,
thank
ma'am.
You all for listening. Don't be surprised if we continue this discussion tomorrow. Bye-bye.